Welcome to the mini pod. I am Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company and the Shepherd Express. I'm going to post this where you're hearing it, but we're also testing out a new feed potentially for all of the podcasts that the Packer related ones that SB Nation is no longer hosting. So I am going to do this as a dry run to see if it works. I have to find a new distribution service. And I will probably point a couple of people towards it just to check it out. But just note that's coming, and we might be bringing some of the pods back sometime soon if all goes well and according to plan, etc. Of course, Reporting as Eligible has its original feed with Matt tapping his chest in the Reporting as Eligible sign. So, you know, you'll have that for us no matter what. But doing some troubleshooting, should be back soon. But today, let's talk about more draft stuff. The draft is in 2 weeks, and it can't get here soon enough because we are definitely to the misinformation part of draft ramp up. And if all of you, some of you don't care about the draft, which until it happens and we get new players, which I get, totally fine. But a couple things, a couple important things happened this week. The first of which I want to mention is Dan Brugler's The Beast was released on The Athletic. And if you don't know what that is, well, first of all, most of you probably do. But if you don't, in terms of pure comprehensive draft guides that give you the total picture of everybody who could possibly be taken in the upcoming NFL draft, broken down by position, with athletic measurables, with comps, with descriptions of the person's personal life growing up, the other sports they played, there is nothing better than The Beast. So they usually have it at the top of The Athletic when you go there. It is free with a subscription to The Athletic. You can go and download it. It is password protected. Smart, Dan. Dan Brugler is, I think, all of our favorite, you know, mass national kind of draft analyst. Everybody looks forward to this because of the insane job he does in researching every single person in it. It honestly, once you've read a Dan Brugler description of a guy, you will immediately be impressed at the sheer scale he puts into coming up with information on all these guys. And if you're sort of like I am, the kind of person who gets like the Baseball Prospectus annual every year, the Football Outsiders annual every year, other types of sports annuals every year. I enjoy reading them in their giant, huge form, hard copy form. And I never have really kind of glommed onto a draft version of any of those until this one. It's legitimately fun to read all the way through. If you like those, you'll like this as well. It comes out in a 300-page PDF, and everybody should go check that out if you're at all interested in the draft and want to know more about the people that we might take. It's where I go to check the numbers that I generate over the course of putting like ROPs and KeyBOPs and all that stuff together, and to get age age. You know how hard it is to track down ages for some guys? Some guys just don't put it out there. It's not on the reference set for college guys. The other day I was trying to find Reggie Brown's age, who's a receiver for James Madison, and it is not out there. And John Meerdink, kudos to John for doing this, actually found it, I assume, via a public record search. But funnily enough, the second after he did that, Reggie Brown's agent actually DM'd me his age. He is 25. He is unfortunately kind of old. He's still good. He's not going to get drafted, but he's a guy to keep an eye on in practice squads because he was legitimately good. But anyway, like, Brugler always finds their ages, and that is one of the things that I always look forward to, too. Age is important. It's one of the best projection factors that there is for everybody. Now, let's set that aside because the other thing that we had that is, I don't know if it's new information exactly, but you know, people keep people do mock drafts. People have the consensus board. There's two of them this year that I think are worth paying attention to. One is the Athletics. The other one is the one that you get when you Google consensus board, which, hold on, it's like mock draft something, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the NFL mock draft databases is fine as well, and sortable, and actually very nice. But ESPN Analytics also published their percentages of a guy's likely availability at different positions. You can go and check this for any position, but we pulled it for 25. The Packers are drafting 25th in the first round, and so we have now a good idea of who will be available. Independent of this, before I knew it existed, I also went and ran 50 NFL mock drafts at PFF just to see kind of the distribution of who was the best player available after simulating that a bunch of times. And, you know, they actually mostly agree with a couple of exceptions. I think for me, you'll start the sort of the player who is most worrisome is Kool-Aid McKinstry, who is a cornerback for Alabama. Is that right? I'm so bad at this. He went to, I think it's Alabama, same school as Terry and Arnold. I got to pull that up really quick. It's driving me crazy. I get Alabama and Georgia mixed up a lot of the time in my brain because, well, I think it kind of makes sense why you would do that. They're similar locations, both red, both good at football. Yep, Alabama, yay me. Kool-Aid McKinstry is like the highest rated player who's almost certain to be there at 25. Like after McKinstry, if there's a better player, it comes down to less than 100. This was also true in my 50 simulations I did as well. And if they're worse than McKinstry, they're always there. I've been calling it the Kool-Aid McKinstry line. I don't like him. I don't think he's particularly good. He was the second best corner at his school. And he is not fundamentally sound. Good athlete, but man, really not my cup of tea. And so if he's there, I think he's if it's looking like he's going to be the best player available there of a position that the Packers actually sort of need, that's not a big need at corner, but corner I think is on the table, that's where trades I think become a good idea, either back or forward to get somebody better. Now, guys who are in sort of the next tier of availability are Adonai Mitchell, the Texas wide receiver. He's fine. Ladd McConkey, who is actually, I think, pretty good. And I would not be unhappy if they picked him there, but he is limited to the slot, and they have Reed already, so there's that. Xavier Worthy. Quick note on Xavier Worthy. Xavier Worthy is a Texas receiver as well. Mitchell is quite a bit better, in my opinion, but Worthy, of course, broke the 40-yard dash record at the Combine. He is very fast. He does not weigh anything, 165 pounds. And he is, in my opinion, a prototypical bust. However, I've now seen two separate metrics that have him as being creating the most separation per route in all of college football, which is not something you usually see of just the, maybe actually, I shouldn't say that. It doesn't strike me as something you usually see of the guys who are just straight burners. Now, maybe that's not true. Maybe if you are just running deep shots, that is something that kind of comes along with it as a selection bias, but I don't know if that's true or not. Aside from that, he didn't run that many deep routes. He's like medium on deep routes. In any case, the point is this. I do pay attention when metrics cut against my preconceived notions. I don't think Worthy's tape is very good, and as a sort of smallish burner, I wouldn't draft him. And so he's been like off my board, a guy I would complain about. All that said, there are metrics that cut against that, and I maybe just didn't watch the right games, or, you know, I'm not the tape watcher of the group. I might be bad at it. Anyway, just keep that in mind. Anyway, Worthy is, according to ESPN Analytics, available in something like 85% of mock drafts there. Next is Chop Robinson, who is an edge rusher from Penn State. This is actually a good test of me knowing guys off the top of my head. He is fine. He was a very prototypical possible Packer thing, and he wasn't as productive as he should have been for how good an athlete he was. That is the mantra of Penn State this year, by the way. That is Penn State in a nutshell. All their guys weren't as productive as how good of an athlete they were. Chop, I think, wouldn't be a terrible pick. You can always use edge guys, but you know, it wouldn't be the first guy I'd go to either. The next on the list, these guys are all available between oh, when do we hit that? Between 70 and 90% of the time. Next up is Jackson Powers Johnson, who I have to look up what he is again. I know he went to Oregon, but I can't remember what he plays. He's an offensive lineman. Does he play center mostly? Shoot. I forget. I didn't watch anything on him because just wasn't that interested. He didn't get a lot of banter on the back end for the packing company Slack. And he's there a lot of the time, too. I think the main reason I didn't look that much at Jackson Powers Johnson is because this is a great offensive line class, great receiver class, great offensive line class. And for offensive linemen, I think he is kind of the, if it's just him, you look to trade as well. Because there's other guys that are likely to be available that the Packers probably jump on. So worth keeping that in mind, too. Then it's Darius Robinson, who, I'll be honest, I don't know anything about. And then we get into, I almost skipped Jazon Newton, a defensive lineman who I'm not interested in at all, but he's there 70% of the time. And then we get into some guys that we actually like. So in the sort of plausible but not for sure range, there are four offensive linemen who we talk about a lot who I think would be pretty good. And then there's Cooper DeJean. And Cooper DeJean is available in 70% of ESPN Analytics, whatever, Monte Carlo, mocks, however they put this together. And I would love it if they got Cooper. He is, aside from being a great athlete, he is very, very clever, very smart in how he goes about his coverage responsibilities. His tape is a joy to watch. I didn't think I'd actually like him as much as I ended up liking him. It's very helpful to have a guy who's really never going to be out of position, who has the makeup speed that you want out of a safety or a nickel corner or an outside corner. And that's the other thing, is he's really versatile. So if you line up in cover two and you want to go to something more aggressive, you can move him down without any trouble, or you can shift him outside without any trouble. And you can put Xavier McKinney back in the post safety spot that he is kind of good at. I think liking Cooper DeJean isn't anything original. I think literally every Packer analyst would love to have him and has said so. But I think it's really true. Consensus is correct here. He would be a good get. Now, he's there, like I said, about 70% of the time in ESPN analytics metrics. When I do mock drafts, I get him like once out of every 25. And so I think he is one where if they have to move up a spot or two, they maybe go and do that. I don't think you go up 10 spots to get Cooper DeJean, although who knows. But I think he is definitely one to keep an eye on, where if they get close and he's on the board, you might see him jump a little bit. Now, after that, Michael Penix is supposed to be on the board, which we don't care about. And then Tyler Guyton's on the board, which, not a big fan. And then we get to, I would say, one of the next big APC favorites, and me as well. I don't do offensive linemen very well, but Graham Barton of Duke. I've seen comped many times to Zach Tom. I think was it Domofsky today who said that he thinks the next Packer center is already on the team and that it's Zach Tom and that they plan to move him inside. I wouldn't do that personally, but it's out there and important to note because it does open up tackle for them, especially a starting tackle. And I also, like, Barton is just their kind of guy. Like, I've seen a couple of reports that his arms might be a little too short, but I don't think so. I don't think that's true. They're longer than Sean Ryan's were, and they moved inside, obviously, but I think Barton can play anywhere. And so that's the kind of like guy they like. Now, he's there about 60% of the time, about the same, a little bit more, but not about the same as Amarius Mims, who is a giant offensive lineman, and not my favorite, but I think he'd be fine, especially out of tackle. And here I need help in pulling up statistics because I have forgotten some of the little details about offensive linemen. Yes, I do have spreadsheets for everything, including this, divided up into tackle and guard, and I should have put them all in the same line. Why did I do that? Amarius Mims is huge, right? Yes, Amarius Mims is huge. He is 340 pounds and 6'7". That's very, very big. I kind of like lean towards the Zach Tommy type guys, and so Barton is much more that. He also might be an inside guy when it's all said and done, but Mims is huge. And then I think it's good talking about Mims and J.C. Latham. Tyler had put out something about Latham today and maybe being a trade-up candidate. He's there in like 5% of the time when on the ESPN analytics. He's there more when I do the PFF mock draft. J.C. Latham, I don't think, did any testing, if memory serves. Let's see here. Yeah, he didn't run the 40. He didn't do stuff. He is... his tape is really good. He went to Alabama. He is a tackle. He is very large. So the number one tackle in this class is Joe Alt of Notre Dame, who's just a giant person. He's like 6'8.5" and 321 pounds and moves like a guy half his size. He is going to go first in terms of linemen for a reason. But J.C. Latham is kind of like him. I do wish he would have tested, but instead of being a super tall, large man, he is a super heavy, large man who moves like somebody half his size. And so I do think he'd be a good one to get, but testing, I know, has made a couple of people skittish. And so worth keeping that in mind. So linemen is a good place to go. You always need them. It's a lineman-heavy draft, and it's likely they get their pick of guys kind of around there. Troy Fotanu is there as well. And so, like, if they end up there, I think that I would wager heavily the Packers end up taking a lineman at that pick. The other guys that are likely to be there are Brian Thomas Jr., LSU's second-best wide receiver after Neighbors. He shows up quite a bit as being available quite a bit. And I think the reason he is so low is that it's hard to tell how good he is because his quarterback was so good and he faced the easier coverage with Neighbors taking the number one corner the whole time. It's hard to kind of separate all of that from Thomas himself. He rops really, really good. He's a good athlete. He is the best receiver likely to be available for the Packers. I do like him better than Adonai Mitchell and McConkey, at least a little bit, but he is a hard scout, and that is why, despite putting up numbers that are on par with the top three receivers in this draft, that he's likely to be a distant fourth. Nate Wiggins, Clemson corner, is likely to be available. Byron Murphy, who might be a decent replacement for Kenny Clark, just to put some clarity on that, there was some like Fanatics account that had Kenny Clark as possibly being cut. They won't cut Kenny Clark. That was ridiculous if you saw it. I just wanted to make sure I'm not affiliating myself with it. But Kenny is getting towards the end of his deal, and so they need to start thinking about defensive line. Murphy might fit into that pretty well. So those are the guys who are likely to be there at 25. If it's anybody worse than McKinstry or worse, I should say, I think at that point they definitely look to trade back. And if a few of these guys are available, they might go up a few spots to get there. Did I mention Troy Fotanu? Whatever, he's good too. He's listed as a guard in the Beast. I think he's a little more versatile than that, although I don't know. Anyway, anything I say on this podcast about offensive linemen, take with a grain of salt and go listen to Tyler and Justice instead. I'm here for skill position players. Those are the guys likely to be there in the first round for them. It's always, of course, possible. The draft is very unpredictable. It's possible guys fall. It's possible guys get taken much earlier. And so I did want to mention just one highly speculative thing in that I have learned that I like Rome Adunes better than everybody else does. Not everybody. He's the consensus third best receiver in this draft, and he's still supposed to go very, very high. It's supposed to be Marvin Harrison, then Malik Neighbors, and then Adunes at some point after that. Let me just see if I have him. Do I have a mock? Oh, I do. Here we go. On the consensus board, he's seventh. So, you know, still very, very, very high. However, I just want to throw it out there that in the event that weird things happen, that he starts to fall down the board a little bit, that Alt goes ahead of him, that Dallas Turner goes ahead of him, that somebody foolishly takes Brock Bowers ahead of him, a good tight end, but not better than that, that the best corner in the class, Quinion Mitchell, goes ahead of him, and he starts to get weirdly into the teens. I think he is better enough than the next best receiver, which is Brian Thomas, that he would be worth a somewhat substantial trade-up. And I know we have good receivers, of course, but I think he is on par with Harrison and Neighbors. his tape is outstanding. His separation is very good. He's put together two consecutive years of outstanding production. He is a monster also. That would be one where you maybe want to think about going up and getting him. So throwing that out there in case it happens. He is not, he's a 0% on everything, but I think there's a couple guys that if they fell into the teens would be tempting. And he's at least one where I think it's possible that that happens. Not likely, but if all that stuff happens, if Bo Nix goes higher than he should and JJ goes where he is currently being mocked to quarterback-wise, it's like a non-zero possibility that he gets to like 14-ish. So just throwing that out there. I guess I would say the same. No, that's not going to happen. That's too speculative. Anyway, that's that. Last thing before we go. This draft has some of my favorite names that I've ever seen. And I was watching the Key and Peele sketch the other day. And it doesn't, I mean, I was watching the Key and Peele sketch while I was going through consensus boards. And like I ran into Kool-Aid McKinstry, which, you know, and you know, this has Michael Penix in it. I did put together a little chart, but I wanted to mention a couple of my favorite names because, first of all, there's a guy who went to Benedict College in this draft named Lubert Dinellis, which is a fantastic name. There's a Washington player named Tuli Latuli Gasenda. That's an excellent name. That one I'm not even going to say. Ladd McConkey is like the perfect guy to end that sketch. But there's also a player from Louisville, I don't think he'll be drafted, named Storm Duck, which I'm just fantastic, and kudos to the Duck family for naming their kid Storm. So I wanted to just mention that as well. Storm Duck is, like, I think maybe the best sports name I've ever heard in my life, and makes me happy that it's out there. So kudos to Storm Duck. You are a cool guy, and I applaud you for sticking with the name Storm Duck for your whole life. So that'll do it. Like I said, this will go to the Patreon, but if you can find it, I'm also going to maybe try and publish it to a maybe new feed that we'll maybe use on maybe some of the other podcasts. That'll do it. We will have like a proper draft podcast sometime soon. It's been a very busy week. And I have to coach youth soccer later, which I'm not looking forward to. I have 16 players this year. That is too many. 10-year-old boys. And they all learned how to swear last year. And it's rough. So much easier when they're 8 or 7. But man, at least they're good. I'll give them that. They're a good team. Anyway, I will leave it at that. Enjoy the Brewers. And the draft will be in a couple weeks, and we'll do a lot of stuff before then. And hopefully we get a whole bunch of cool players. Enjoy the weekend. Have a relaxing one.
Somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folders, and studying black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is because you may know somebody in a similar situation. Or you may be in a similar situation, and if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do, is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in, say shrink. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony...